Jacksonville voters give Mayor Lenny Curry a second term. Good Wednesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we've got full election results on all of the top races and your calls. Give us a call right now. Let us know your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, Muslims on the First Coast react to the recent mass shooting in New Zealand. Plus, later in the hour, a preview of Generation W. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry easily won a second term last night in the city elections. In his victory speech, Curry pledged to transform the city's urban core.
We're going to make downtown a destination, residential, retail, sports, art, and entertainment. You will not recognize downtown in 4 years.
Now, Curry easily fought off multiple challengers, including Councilwoman Anna Brochet, who came in second in the mayor's race. On the campaign trail, she had criticized his tenure for everything from allegations of bullying to insider cronyism, a lack of transparency in local government, to an alleged backdoor attempt to privatize JEA. Sheriff Mike Williams also easily won a second term last night, despite criticism over this city's high crime rate. All of that said, there will be a few runoff contests coming up in May. Here now in studio with more, we welcome David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union. Hey, David, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. And it's 549-2937. Give us a call as we talk about last night's election results. So Mayor Curry was expected by most political observers to win outright last night. The results were not too much of a surprise. And so we have four more years of Lenny Curry. What can we look for, do you think, in a second term?
Well, he talked some about it. Downtown development's going to be big. There's been a lot of stuff in the works, in the pipeline, see if that comes to fruition. Talked a lot about trying to do more investment in terms of sidewalks, streets, drainage, and neighborhoods. He's still got a big issue in terms of violent crime, which is still some of the worst violent crime in the state. It's right here in Jacksonville, so that's incomplete in terms of being able to fulfill that campaign promise he had from 4 years ago. He will have, obviously, some wind at his back. I mean, he won re-election, and it's actually the third time he's won an election in 4 years since he won the mayor's race 4 years ago, then a big referendum to take care of some of the pension problems, and now his election yesterday.
Let me quote to you from this morning's column in your publication, the Times Union, columnist Nate Monroe writing that it took the mayor nearly $5 million to achieve this victory, a democracy-warping amount of money and a testament to the lasting power of the Jacksonville oligarchy.
Well, that's Nate's, does not mince words. He's right. It was a huge, huge amount of money that was spent in this race. I think Nate averaged out a $60 per vote for the mayor. It's just overwhelming in terms of the amount of money that was pumped into it. Now, look, 4 years ago, both sides, when Alvin Brown was running for re-election, he raised millions of dollars. Curry raised millions of dollars. This time it was like he raised millions of dollars, did not have a formidable operation running against him, but still went often and early to his campaign contributors, and they really came through with a lot of money.
Right. Nearly $5 million for a local mayor's race. It's extraordinary.
It is. And when you think about it, I don't know if that's the new template from here on out. And, you know, he's got a lot of money that's left over, I believe. So it'll be interesting to see how his political committee uses that funds to influence and support cancel candidates who still are going to be in the ballot in May.
So clearly, Mayor Curry, popular with a majority of voters, although, as the TU and others have noted, the turnout was less than 25%. So in a March election where turnout is low, incumbents have a serious advantage. That said, let's look at where Curry's challengers went wrong. Chiefly his Republican challenger, Anna Brochet, and also the local Democratic Party, which has taken a lot of criticism for failing to field a candidate to challenge Curry.
Right.
On the northwest side, the predominantly Democratic part of town, more people in that part of town left the ballot blank for mayor than any other precincts in the city. A sort of protest vote that they didn't have a Democrat to vote for, I guess.
Yeah, you think about it, in a low turnout election, you have voters who actually did go to the polls, got their ballot, and the first race was mayor, and they skipped it. So, yeah. You know, that's kind of like, what does that tell you in terms of the voter enthusiasm among a lot of voters for the choices they had? You know, I think for the Anna Brochet campaign, University of North Florida political science professor Michael Bender said from the get-go, she waited too long. It was too little too late. She didn't file until the final day, deadline to file for mayor. And then when she did come out, it wasn't like she came out seemingly with all pistons firing. It was a sort of a slow rollout. She didn't hit the air right away with her advertising. She did a lot of small group meetings. It wasn't something where you felt like there was this campaign that was ready to spring into action after waiting as long as she did to file. And, you know, when you're running it for mayor of Jacksonville, it's a big city. I think the lesson here is if you want to run for mayor, you start early and you build up your war chest and you build up your contacts. You don't try to do it in a two-month campaign.
In a two-month window. Give us a call as we talk about last night's election results at 549-2937. Okay, some runoffs we need to inform people about. Many candidates won outright last night, but five city council races are headed to a runoff. No single candidate crossed the 50% vote threshold. Two prominent Democrats, Lisa King and Tommy Hazzouri, will face runoffs against their Republican opponents. And those are in at-large group one and two.
So the Lisa King versus Terrence Freeman race, I'm looking forward to that. I think it should be an interesting race. They're definitely going to have different agendas. It'll be interesting to see who can turn out their voters. Lisa King, of course, was a nemesis of the Curry administration. The Curry administration, I'm sure, would love to see Terrence Freeman in that seat. I look for that to be one where the Curry operation will come to support Freeman. The Hazzouri race is fascinating because Hazzouri cut ads supporting endorsing
Lenny Curry.
Yeah. Now it's Hazzouri versus a Republican.
So what will the mayor's machine do?
Right.
Will they support Hazzouri or will they support Republican Greg Rachel?
It's a great question. I mean, does he cross party lines in one city, one Jacksonville in the May election? Or does he go all in for the Republican, or does he just sort of leave his hands off and that's a race, let Hazzouri win or lose a race on his own?
And did Tommy Hazzouri lose some Democratic votes to another Democrat that was on the ballot because he appeared in those ads with a Republican mayor?
I think so. I think that probably had an impact on him. Now, Hazzouri could probably say, well, there was no Democrat on the ballot for me to support. There was no Democrat for mayor. And given the choices out there, I felt like this was the best person to lead the city for the next 4 years. It really is striking that Democrats had nobody running for mayor as a Democrat. And I think that hurt a lot of the down ballot races. In the tax collector race, John Crescenbeny finished in the low 40% against Jim Overton. Overton got the office back in November in a squeaky close election where the Democrat almost won that time. It's just all the difference in voter turnout. It's not like tax collector is something where you sort of – that's a lot of that is party affiliation.
Absolutely.
In terms of who you pick when you have a choice there.
Right. That's not typically – I mean, that's not a partisan function for the most part. And the property appraiser race as well, Republican Jerry Holland easily won re-election there over his Democratic challenger.
Yeah, and that was not a surprise. I mean, Jerry Holland's won countywide before, and he has a very strong political operation.
Okay, and a few other runoffs to be aware of. If you live in City Council District 8, incumbent Councilwoman Jacoby Pittman, who is a Democrat and was appointed by former Governor Rick Scott after after political trouble befell the other office holder there, she will face Tamika Gaines-Holly in a runoff. In District 10, Brenda Priestley-Jackson will run off against Celestine Mills, both of them Democrats. And in District 14, a runoff between Republican Randy DeFore and Democrat Sonny Gettinger. That's an interesting race to watch as well. That encompasses Riverside, Avondale, and then parts of the city's west side.
That's a purple district. So again, that'll be an interesting one to watch in terms of how Jacksonville is trending over time in terms of these particular races. You know, one thing, there's a lot of the races are going to be taking place in May in Democrat areas of the city. perhaps that does help somebody who, like an at-large council race of Lisa King or Tommy Yasuri, because there presumably is going to be support at the grassroots level for or turnout operation at the grassroots level for Democrat candidates.
Yeah, I mean, think about this May runoff now, where we saw in March, we saw 24% turnout. In May, some of these races will see 9% or less turnout. We could conceivably be seeing some of these folks elected by a few hundred voters. Right. I mean, it could be that small.
Friends and family.
Yes, exactly.
You know, there was 34% turnout 4 years ago in the mayor's race, the first election. This time it was 24%. So yes, turnout really dropped off sharply, and it's going to be even worse in the May election. It's going to be all about finding supporters. I don't know if there's any big issues between now and then that are to galvanize the election one way or the other.
Right, and elections cost the same whether 9% of the voters turn out or 80%.
That's right.
So exactly. It's more money on all of us, the taxpayers. Speaking yes. of which, up in Camden County, Georgia, we want to make mention of the fact that they had an election last night, too, and overwhelmingly approved a half-cent sales tax to pay for needed county improvements. That's just something that I know our listeners in Georgia have been following and asked us to mention as well. What are your final thoughts, David Bauerlein?
Well, in terms of the election, I think it probably played out about the way everybody expected to. Anna Brochet's campaign, as my colleague Nate Monroe wrote, it never really created a narrative in terms of why people should buy into throwing out the incumbent. So the mayor's race, Curry is in a strong position now in the next 4 years. I thought there were some good issues debated during the campaign, but it certainly was not a suspenseful night at all. I think the council races will still be interesting. I mean, Tommy Yasuri, we'll see what happens. I mean, that would be a big race to watch.
That'll be an interesting one to watch. And do you think the issues raised in the campaign will inform, in any respect, the mayor's second term, taking some of the feedback that he got to heart?
Yeah, I think so. You know, he may disagree with that. But, you know, there was a lot of emphasis on crime, on the prevention and intervention. I do think that's going to be something we'll see more of in the second term. Certainly the JEA was debated. There's a huge amount of skepticism from his fellow, from the opponents of his. And he did make some real strong pledges not to sell JEA. So I think that's going to be something that will carry over to the second term.
Let's take one call before we go to break. It's Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Ah, good morning. Yes, I was thinking about the election, and my thought is I think that where Anna Brochet went wrong was with her very first ad, the gunfire ad. I do not think the electorate knew her well enough for her to be able to win in a negative campaign. I think she would have been better served if she'd run a more positive campaign based on who she was and what she was bringing to the table.
Okay, so you feel that she just didn't explain her reasons for running succinctly enough, I guess. Thanks for that call.
Not early enough.
Not early enough. Okay, thanks for that call, Tom.
Yeah, we were talking earlier when she did file, you would think that would be the first rollout. Would you have ads up on the air right away? I'm Anna Brochet. I'm a daughter of a Navy person, married to a Navy guy. You know, this is my hometown. I grew up here, played in the city parks. There never was that type of an ad, the big introductory ad, to tell people who Anna Brochet was. And by the time she did go on the air, it was, I'm not who my opponent says I am. So she started off at a disadvantage.
Well, we always appreciate your insights. David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union, thanks for coming in after a long night last night to be with us. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Much more still ahead on the show. Keep listening. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
Here at WJCT, we're working hard to fundraise without interrupting the programs you love. Thanks to everyone who has made their donation early. If you haven't donated, consider this. If the first thing you do in the morning is tune in to WJCT-FM, or if your car dial is turned to 89FM, then the last thing you want is interruptions for fundraising. Be a team player and help minimize the number of pledge days on air. Give today at wjct.org/radiouninterrupted. And thanks.
Witness over three decades of jazz through 22 top five albums, five of which hit number one on the Billboard charts. The Rippingtons, featuring Russ Freeman, have continued to innovate. Jazz's Magazine has called their debut album the number one most influential contemporary jazz album of all time. Don't miss your chance to see the Rippingtons live at the WJCT Soundstage, March 28th. Tickets on sale now at floridatheater.com.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, here's a question. How did an accomplished actress like Smallville star Allison Mack get sucked into a secret sex cult? Author Renee Linnell knows from experience. Now, despite achieving success as a surf model and a professional dancer and traveling all around the world, Renee was still searching for something. In June of 2006, near her home in Southern California, she walked into a meditation seminar, expecting to hear the calming voice of an older woman wearing a white robe, sandals, that kind of thing. Instead, the speaker was a young and striking woman dressed in an expensive suit with stilettos. She was oozing confidence and kicked off the session not with spa music, but a song from a fight scene in a Matrix movie. In a flash, Renee was hooked. In her new memoir, The Burn Zone, Renee Linnell shares the story of her quest for truth and peace that ended with a nearly 7-year detour into hell at the hands of her spiritual teachers. She recounts how she got sucked into a cult called the University of Mysticism and gave away her most cherished possessions, tens of thousands of dollars, and all of her personal power. Along the way, she ignored her intuition, her better judgment, and she fully embraced a twisted ideology. How did she finally break free, and how did all of this happen? How do otherwise intelligent, educated people get sucked into cults? It's all in the pages of The Burn Zone, a memoir, and we're pleased to have Renee Linnell on the line now to tell us more. Renee, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. That's quite an introduction.
Well, thank you. It's quite a book. And I think this is fascinating to so many people because cults and cult-like organizations continually keep cropping up and suck in adherents despite, perplexed reactions from and horrified reactions often from friends and loved ones who they can't understand how the people close to them can be lured into these situations, whether it was Jim Jones and Guyana or the Moonies or Scientology, which is cult-like, or the organization that you got drawn into. So let's go back to the beginning. What was it about this organization, the University of Mysticism, that first sort of pulled you in?
What pulled me in was the peace that I experienced when I meditated. And I had been raised Catholic, so, and that just didn't really work for me. And then most of my family died when I was young, leaving me with an abusive alcoholic mother. So I was searching from a very young age for answers to the big questions, like why are we here and what comes after we die? And I also had this beautiful dream life as a surf model and a professional Argentine tango dancer traveling the world, but I felt sad inside no matter what I accomplished. And I felt like nobody understood me. And people don't really talk about that, feeling like you're all alone and nobody really understands you and you don't fit in anywhere. So I thought I was the only one. And when I walked into this meditation seminar and I felt this incredible peace the first time I meditated, I thought I had found my tribe and a place finally where I belonged.
That's the allure. People are so desperate to feel a sense of belonging and a sense of community that they can make choices that end up being so devastating. And that, tell me what happened to you as you kept taking further and further steps into this group. What happened?
Well, I realize now it's like any toxic relationship where if you go on a first date and somebody hits you or says something abusive, you don't go on a second date. But in the beginning, they're invested in romancing you. And the same thing with this group. I was romanced and I was given all of these amazing, empowering tasks, like learning to meditate and becoming a computer programmer because the teacher was a female. She said it would sharpen my mind to learn computer programming and then help me make more money so that I could meditate better. I was told to get a black belt in karate because that would make me stronger. And then I eventually was running their company. So there were probably for 2 years, there was a lot of buildup where my life was changing in magnificent ways. But then, of course, as I made more money, I paid more money. So the tuition went up. And as I did more and more tasks for them, I spent less and less time doing the things I really loved, like surfing and dancing or spending time with old friends. So without realizing it, my support structure went away. And then once my life was completely consumed by the group, they started in with a self-doubt, saying, in order to become enlightened, you have to change in this way and that way and this way. And I think once anybody introduces self-doubt, our power goes away.
And that was the hardest thing for you, I guess, in terms of what you lost. You lost money, you lost independence, but you lost all sense of a personal agency. And that's what cults do to people, to adherents.
They do. And again, that's what any abusive relationship does. When you spend too much time around anybody that tells you you're not good enough, our minds are so malleable that we start to believe it. And once we believe that we're stupid or we're not good or we're sinners, or whatever, that we're ugly, we start to own it, and then we start to portray it, and then we become this really powerless version of ourselves.
And so at what point then did you realize that you were in a cult and that you needed to get out? What prompted that catharsis, that realization for you?
Well, there were signs all along the way, and I think there are always signs, I think, in any relationship that we need to get out of. I think our inner guidance is incredibly strong, but those of us that are drawn to narcissists tend to be codependent, and so we tend to think, if I just tried a little harder, I would be more lovable and this relationship would work. So I kept sticking it out, determined to become enlightened, and I fortunately got thrown out of the cult because the plot thickens. There was a male spiritual teacher, and I was working for him, and then he started seducing me. He was 12 years older. I became his consort, which is when a spiritual teacher takes a student as a consort. Well, it turns out the female teacher did not know about this and was also in love with him and dating him. So I was screwing my guru's boyfriend, which is a horrifying epiphany when you're a student.
Oh, wow.
And she pretty much threw me out. She gave me an impossible task, which was to go get an MBA from one of the hardest business schools in the country immediately and then start a business that made $10 million profit after taxes. And once I did that, I could come back to the group. So fortunately, there was distance. And again, with toxic relationships, once you have the distance, you start to see clearly. But my life had to completely shatter into a million pieces for me to finally see clearly.
And that's true of many other cult survivors. There are all kinds of different cults, but they kind of describe a similar trajectory. So this is interesting to me because as you write in your book, The Burn Zone, there are religious cults, there are secular cults, there are all kinds of groups that have the hallmarks of a cult, but they tend to be similar hallmarks. What are some red flags that people should be aware of? That if they think they're joining a group that is all about self-empowerment and enlightenment, that there's something wrong. What should people be wary of? What are some of the things people should be on the lookout for to stay away from?
One definite red flag is some group that's easy to get into and harder to leave. So, for example, they start off with a free class, and then it's a $5 class, and then suddenly there's an option to pay $100. And then if you join this tier, you know, it's $2,000. And so the more you get invested financially, the less you're willing to back down because you're more committed. Another red flag is where all of it revolves around the leader so that you feel like you need access to the leader in order to get the benefit rather than just being taught a skill set that you can then take home and do on your own. And I think any group, when they're shaming, when you try to leave or you start to express doubt and they shame you and ostracize you, and then any group that just doesn't make you feel good. I think it's fine when you feel good and you feel empowered and you feel a sense of community and growth. That's wonderful. And when it starts to turn to where you start feeling badly about yourself or not good enough or not loved by the leaders, then it's time to leave.
And this phenomenon of a charismatic leader who demands money and unquestioning loyalty, this happens over and over again in society, whether it was David Koresh in Waco. Earlier, I mentioned Jim Jones and what happened in Guyana. People literally willing to go to their deaths because a cult leader told them to. Mind control is so easy to achieve when people are vulnerable. That's frightening to me. I think that's frightening to a lot of people that have read your story because you were very successful, had an MBA, very accomplished, and at a vulnerable moment, even someone like you could get sucked into this. I think that's frightening for people to realize how easily manipulated people can be.
It is frightening, and it was shocking for me when I came out the other side of it. But, you know, what I realized is each one of us is born unique, and then we try to hide what makes us different in order to fit in and in order to be accepted and to be loved. So we take all the unique parts of ourselves, the things that make us, quote, weird, and we stuff them down, and then we try to be, quote, normal. And that is soul-killing, and it makes us, on a deep level, quite sad inside, and it makes us attract to us groups and situations that don't really fit us. And so then when we finally find a group that allows us to be our unique, quirky, weird self, we find it intoxicating, and we're really willing to do whatever it takes to stay a part of that group. And so I learned that if we're willing to celebrate what makes us different from a young age and own it and turn up the volume on it, then we repel the people that are turned off by it, but we attract the people that love the true us. And then we're much less willing to be around anyone that doesn't treat us well.
Sure. And I think that's good advice for everyone. What advice do you have also for people who have family members who have become part of a toxic group and they haven't been able to pull them out of it? And one example that comes to mind has gotten a lot of publicity lately, including here in Florida, is Scientology, which is regarded as a cult-like group. It has a huge base over in Clearwater, Florida. People that have been drawn into it have been and then try to leave. They've been threatened with disconnection from their family. They've faced all kinds of harassment and abuse. The actress Leah Remini has done a really good job, I think, of exposing the abuses of Scientology on her television program. So that's just one example out of many that we could point to right here in Florida, where people are suffering. So what advice do you have for those who have a loved one that they can't reach, that is in the grip of something like this?
The advice I have is honest, and I don't think that those hearing it really love it, but there's nothing they can do, because it's based on faith. And faith, the definition of faith, is believing in something we don't see. So once somebody has a belief system in their mind, they just don't want to let go of it. And so for a loved one, I would say all you can do, my twin brother said the best thing when I was pushing everyone out of my life and changing my phone number and email address. He said, I don't care how weird you get. I don't care what you're doing. I trust you to make the right decisions in your life, but just you have to keep a line open to me because I'm your only family. And because he wasn't asking questions and he wasn't trying to pull me out and he wasn't saying the group was bad, I loved him for that. And so he wasn't a threat. And so I would say to family members and friends, all you can do is become the best version of yourself there is, so that when they look at you, they see a very balanced, very happy, very content person that's thriving. And so then you become a beacon of light yourself, and they will eventually be drawn to you.
Now, let me ask you about the title of your book, The Burn Zone. What does that refer to?
Well, I had named it, I Drank the Kool-Aid, The Long Journey Back to Myself. Yeah. And I didn't love that title, but it sounded victim-y to me a little bit, but it was the only one that came. And my publisher changed it to The Burn Zone, which I love. And I realized in the beginning of the book, I talk about sitting in the very front row of this meditation seminar when I had this incredible experience of light. And the teacher said, you're in the burn zone. You may want to move back a few rows, when I asked what happened to me. But then I had referenced fire all throughout the book, starting with Viktor Frankl's quote, what is to give light must endure burning. And I realized as I went through the total meltdown and total break apart and shattering of my life and my mind, that when I had been melted in a crucible, and when I finally came out the other side, I really am a stronger, wiser, kinder, more compassionate, less judgmental, less self-righteous, much more authentic, beautiful version of myself. And I thought, this is what happens when life smashes us. If we're willing to hang in there and come out the other side, we come out a much better version.
That's certainly, when you did walk through fire, it sounds like, but it's exciting to hear that you are thriving today, that there is hope for people who have been in this situation.
Thank you. Yeah, it's interesting because those of us that join a spiritual path, we think that we're going to become enlightened, and this enlightened version of us is this pure saintly version. And what I realized is that fire, it purified me in the fact that it stripped away everything that wasn't authentic, but that the enlightened version of me is a tequila drinking, dancing on the bar, spinning around a stripper pole version of me that loves to meditate and be kind. I just want to be kind now. And I realized that's how I spread light, by leaving 15 minutes earlier so I'm not a jerk in traffic, or by leaving a larger tip, or opening doors, or smiling when I don't feel like it. There are a million ways for me to be saint-like every day and still be authentically me and not have to wear white and live in an ashram.
Now, let me mention you have Florida ties. You grew up in South Florida, and I am being told now that you are also a graduate of Jacksonville University. Is that right?
I did. I graduated magna cum laude with a double degree in dance and psychology from JU in 1996.
Wow. Well, that's exciting to hear, because we want to make mention of the fact that you are appearing tonight at the Bookmark in Neptune Beach at 7 p.m., a talk and a book signing for your book, The Burn Zone. And so people need to come out for this. I think we're getting lots of tweets, by the way, Renee, about this. Here's one. The segment about cults is enlightening and gut-wrenching. Another tweet. Cult members all seem to have the same thing in common, easily manipulated and searching for external validation. So, Renee, lots of interest in this topic. We invite everyone to come out and see you tonight, 7 p.m. at the Bookmark in Neptune Beach. get a signed copy of Renee Linnell's book, The Burn Zone, a memoir. So, Renee, anything else people need to know before they come out tonight to see you?
Just to believe in yourself. Each one of us is so perfect just the way we are, and we're bombarded by messaging that tells us that we're not. And so just to dig deep and realize you're amazing and that your life is supposed to be a life of joy, and don't let anybody ever tell you who you are.
Thanks, Renee. That's author Renee Linnell. Melissa. Thank you so much. It's The Burn Zone. The signing and talk is tonight, 7 p.m. at the Bookmark in Neptune Beach. And a quick break, but after this, Donna Orender with a preview of this year's Generation W. Keep listening.
Well, hey there. David Luckin here, taking a quick interruption while we bring in our next guest, because we're in our uninterrupted pledge drive. So without our interrupting your shows, your donations are already flowing in. Can you believe it? We're doing really well, but we can do better. We don't like to interrupt programming with Pledge, so won't you consider calling WJCT right now at 353-9528 and give what you can so that we don't have to interrupt your programming. Individual support is our most reliable source of income. It's what helps pay the $500,000 bill for the shows you rely on every day. So please, call us now at 353-9528 or give online at WJCT/radio uninterrupted. And thank you so much for your support. So we don't have to interrupt the programming. We need you to call us right now. 353-9528. And thank you.
Welcome back. Well, transformation is the theme for this year's premier women's leadership event, Generation W. Founder Donna Orender is here now to tell us all about it. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. Okay, so transformation is the theme at Gen W coming up this Friday, April 5th at UNF. Tell me about the idea behind that.
Well, you know, let's think about it, right? We can say that change is as old as time, but the rapidity of change that we're living in today, if you look at the impact of obviously technology and the digital age, all of that, it is really hard for us to get our arms around how quickly things are changing. Mm-hmm. You can see that in the world of climate change, whatever your belief about that is, if you look at the charts, our planet cannot adjust to how quickly the climate is changing, although climate has always changed. And so we thought, you know what? We're all busy every single day. You're behind your microphone. You're preparing stories. We don't have time to think about what's happening. And we said, you know, let's spend a day thinking about transformation, personal transformation. How do we continue to be the best we can be in a world that is changing around us so fast? Mm-hmm. How do we figure out how to be the best we can be professionally in companies that are also trying to transform and adjust to a world that's changing so fast? And then, you know, I think ultimately we all want to be part of something that's good, that's bigger than ourselves. How do we make our communities better? And so it's going to be a pretty amazing day, Melissa.
Okay, and this is coming up, as I said, Friday, April 5th, and an incredible lineup with internationally renowned speakers. Tell us who's on the agenda this year, because you bring really world-renowned people to Jacksonville for Generation W.
I have to just say this. I think it's one of the gifts that we all get to participate in as part of this. And sometimes I sit in the back. I mean, I do sit in the back most of the day, and I say, wow, look what we're learning today. Look at the people who come to Jacksonville to share this with us. And by the way, we have people that come from 30 states. But to answer your question, so Dr. Olinda Johnson will be back. She is a phenomenal, phenomenal professor. She teaches leadership at the United States Naval War College. So she teaches our top military leaders, our top people in government related to the military. She is a phenomenal thinker, communicator, inspirer. And she's, and you know, her theory is this: there is a transformational leader in each one of us. So think about that, right? We're going to all leave in touch with that person. Another thing that's changing, I don't know how you feel, but You know, are we going to all be replaced by robots? What's happening in the future of work?
That's a very big fear. I think a lot of people have. Will they be automated out of a job?
Correct.
And so how will that be addressed?
Well, Pearson and Oxford, both international education global companies, did a white paper research on the future of work. And Leah Jewell is coming. She is, again, another. We really look for people who are fantastic communicators, warm, want to be there, want to engage. She's gonna, and I had a chance to go through it with her. It's unbelievable. I want to spill all the beans, but it is a fantastic presentation on the future of work. How do we fit in? What should we be thinking about? How do we maintain our relevancy? Mm-hmm. As companies, what is going to be valued? Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to a lot of it is, think about our lifespans, how they are continually getting longer and longer, and how that impacts also, the future of work.
It does. People are working longer. They can't afford to retire at the age our parents and our grandparents did. I think that brings a lot of stress and anxiety for people, too.
True.
They need to stay healthy so that they can keep working longer because they can't afford to retire.
True. And Leah's there also to answer questions, right? To interact, to understand really what our concerns and fears are, not just to present, academic data. That's just not what we do, as you would know. It really is about creating these conversations and these interactions. We have transforming women. Women are transforming their world. Sarah Buller is coming. She has an amazing story about how one woman is so engaged in Montgomery, Alabama, really a seat of, civil rights and social justice. And she's mm-hmm. going to tell her story about how we can change community. We don't need permission from anyone else. We can gather people, build believers, and she's great. Mm-hmm. And then Neha Gandhi's coming. She's I call her the ultimate girl boss. She is the editor-in-chief of Girl Boss. She is one of these phenomenally connected social media mavens who understands how social media works in our world and will share the value in terms of building brands and who we are. But at the same time, also, again, address our fears. I said, there's a lot of us in the audience and what does all this mean? What about our privacy? Right. Mm-hmm. I understand I can build a company and here's our brand, but how do I fit into that, especially with everything that's happening? So, there's just so much diversity that comes around this. One of the things we haven't talked enough about, and it has been a driving force, is one of the most impactful things in our life is art. Think about it. Art is so vital. Art is everywhere. I am troubled by, and I'm sure many others who are listening, about, the constant conversations about eliminating art in our young children's lives or
youth
lives.
And in schools.
In schools. And it is such an important education piece.
And we will hear more about that and more as Donna Orender, founder of Generation W, joins us. That conference is coming up next month. More about how you can attend in just a few minutes. Keep listening. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be right back.
ServPro of Jacksonville South and Arlington is proud to support the J.T. Townsend Foundation, helping families living with disabilities right here on the First Coast. Learn more at jtgivesback.org.
Westminster St. Augustine, a senior living community located in World Golf Village, offering residents maintenance-free living and active lifestyle options, plus assisted living, nursing care, and therapy. More information is available at westminsterstaugustinefl.org.
In these early campaign 2020 days, where candidates get their money might be just as important as how much they get.
Many voters don't like corporations and therefore are suspicious of corporate PACs.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Corporate Political Action Committees and the looming presidential race next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
One district attorney's office in Mississippi strikes many more black people from its juries than white people.
You just can't strike them because they're black. But how can you tell why a prosecutor is striking a black juror?
Allegations of discrimination in jury selection head to the Supreme Court. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
The mission of the Federal Aviation Administration is to provide the world's safest, most efficient aerospace system. But the Boeing 737 MAX saga suggests the company had the authority to certify the safety of its own planes. Air travel leaves no room for error. How should we fix the FAA? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Turn to WJCT for more than just headlines. WJCT gives you news without spin or sensationalism. We partner with NPR, Marketplace, and the BBC to bring you national, international, and local news. And you are another of our indispensable partners. Your support makes our coverage possible. Donate now at wjct.org/radiouninterrupted. And thank you.
Welcome back. Women's leadership and transformation is the theme of this year's Generation W Conference coming up Friday, April 5th at UNF. WJCT is a media sponsor of this annual event, a premier women's leadership event. Founder Donna Orender is here now to tell us a little bit more. Now, we were just talking about some of the speakers, Donna, that you'll have, including a Holocaust survivor. Is that right?
That's correct. Dr. Edith Eger is one of the most amazing human beings that I have ever run across. I've just recently read her book, The Choice. I would recommend it to everyone. Talk about resiliency. We actually have a lot of meetings. We talk a lot about themes and philosophy. And we said, okay, you know, what is one of the most transformative things in life? If everyone did this one thing, how could we change the world? Everybody should ask themselves that question. You can answer it in wherever you are. But we came up with kindness. And here is a woman who she doesn't even want to look at herself as a survivor of the most horrific. She looks at herself as somebody who is there to help us get into our minds to think about kindness and resilience. Her experience, her personal experience, is beyond comprehension, truly beyond comprehension. She's 91 years old. She is incredibly thoughtful, articulate, passionate. She has changed my life in the short amount of time that we've gotten to work with her. And I'm so excited that she's going to be traveling here to Jacksonville, Florida for Generation W.
How do you pick your speakers? Because you bring in a really incredible array of speakers every year.
Well, you know what's really fun, I would say, Melissa, is now a lot of people are calling us.
Oh, that's great.
With ideas, and they say, and so we get the best of the best. But like, this person's amazing. And people understand that we want people who are warm and open. They're not on the stage no one's there to sell anything. They're there to share their authentic story with a tremendous amount of openness. And that openness pervades the entire experience for all the women and men who join us at Generation W. Mm-hmm. Art, as I said to you, art is a big thing, right? Art is all about, you know, we learn through art. We get healthy through art, social justice through art, beauty and art, community building around art. And so we have, art will be woven throughout. We're so proud that when you walk in the lobby that Art Republic has curated a beautiful 8 female artists will be featured in the lobby as an art show.
Nice.
Really, really, really nice. And then, of course, transforming people's lives. So we want to give back. And with Publix's help and the Feeding Northeast Florida and Linda Wing at the UNF, we're asking everybody who comes to bring a canned good, because we really want to help change the students' lives. Did you know that there's 30% of students on campus generally around the country, not only just here, have food insecurity?
Right.
Our kids can't learn if they're hungry.
That's right.
So it'd be really nice if everybody, you know, pitches it. Again, we are a community coming together, and that community coming together, even by that process, we're going to help make people's lives better.
Now, you've spun off Generation W to other initiatives, by the way, Generation Works, which are community improvement projects around Jacksonville, and Generation WOW, where you work with young girls. Let me take a minute to plug your book, which is an incredible book you should buy every young girl in your life. It's called Wowsdom. And I'm assuming we can buy copies of that at this event, too.
Yes, yes, that's so funny. Yes, matter of fact, now that you mention it, we will have a table. And I am a big believer that there's a young girl in all of us. Therefore, ergo, the book is really adaptable, applicable to anybody, including I talked to my husband, and I told him there's a young girl in him, too.
That's right. That's right. Behind every great woman is a great man.
Oh, gosh. And I think I have one of the greatest
ever. You have ones in your husband, M.G. Orender. So it's genwnow.com. Register now for Generation W. It's coming up Friday, April 5th on the UNF campus. Founder Donna Orender doing great things in this community. And thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I'm here on behalf of our whole team who's back at the office working to make this really... And listen, I just want to invite everybody to come. As long as we're going to be there, it's an experience truly, truly, truly that is one day in the making. But listen, I will tell you, it'll last for a really long time.
Thank you, Donna. And before we wrap things up, our program director, David Luckin, is here to let us know about our uninterrupted pledge drive happening now, David.
Oh, thank you so much, Melissa. 353-9528. We are not interrupting any of the programming. We're just stepping on where we would play a promo or a little bump music to get you to the phones to give us a call. We want to keep this uninterrupted. So please take the time now to go online at wjct.org/radiouninterrupted or call us right now at 353-9528. And thank you so much for your support for this program and all the great programs you count on from us. Do that. Make that phone call right now. 353-9528. Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, David. Make the call now so we don't have to interrupt all your favorite shows. Speaking of which, 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.